Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Connections Radio. As always, we have a very special guest that's going to be talking to us tonight about sacred geometry and pendants and glass and all types of things like that, and we're going to bring him on in a minute. Before we get started, though, I want to let you know that if you're interested in finding out more about this radio show and other radio shows that we air every week on Spiritual Connections Radio, we have some shows that run monthly. We have some shows that run every night, stuff like that. So if you want to find out more about this show and other shows, you can go to www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and introduce Samuel. Samuel, are you there?
I sure am.
Hey, Sam. Can I call you Sam, or do you want me to call you Samuel?
Sam is fine.
Okay, great. So welcome, Sam, and I'll start off by telling the audience like how I got started with meeting you. I had been traveling around the country running some spiritual conferences for Deborah King, basically setting up a booth for her at different expos around the U.S. And if I remember correctly, I met you at the expo in Long Beach, California, and I think that's where you had your booth set up.
It was probably the Health Freedom Expo.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. So I know for you, you probably had to narrow that down a little bit because, and we can start by talking about that a little bit. I mean, how many different expos do you do per year?
Probably about, 15 or so. It varies.
Yeah. And, you know, probably what do you think, you know, not that we need to start rating each of these, but which expo do you think brings in the largest amount of people onto the floor?
Well, my favorite in L.A. is the Conscious Life Expo. They're my people. They're into metaphysics. They're the mind, body, spirit, culture, creatives. And having been in L.A. all my life, I really, you know a lot of people and resonate with the people. And that's good. It's not only the size, it's not the size of the wave, it's the motion of the ocean. So it's not necessarily the quantity, but the quality of people, too, and how much they're in alignment with what you're presenting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely know from doing some expos this year myself, this is my first time actually setting up a booth and being at a lot of the expos, and I know exactly what you mean when you say that. Now, I know normally when I had a chance to come by your booth, I had a chance to meet your wife. Now, she normally travels with you to a lot of the expos?
Most of them she comes with me.
Yeah.
We're both retired.
What is it that she used to do?
I was a teacher for 22 years with the L.A. Unified School District, and she was a nurse for 42 years, postpartum nurse, and her last 15 or so years was with UCLA Santa Monica Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know when I was there, I had the chance to sit down and do a reading with her after I had bought some of the sacred geometry pendants and everything that we're going to be talking about in a few minutes. and just an absolute beautiful gift that she has that I had a chance to experience.
Yeah, it's funny because at the shows, I tell her, why don't you put out a little cup for donations? Because she has people pick out three pendants that they resonate with, and she does the reading based on the pendants they picked out. And she says, my guidance tells me I'm not supposed to charge. And then most of the people end up, she narrows it down to the one their body wants at the end of the reading, and most people end up buying a pendant, but some of them don't. And she's totally good with that, just sharing her
gift. So, since we're kind of talking about that, and of course I sent all kinds of love and everything to her, just absolutely incredible sitting and talking with her. So make sure to tell her I said hi and that we were thinking about her this evening. So sending lots of love to her.
Yeah, I will. We've been married 19 years.
Excellent. So, I guess for some of our audience, they're not going to understand what it means to say the words like sacred geometry or penance, or they can't even imagine probably what we're talking about. And probably for a lot of spiritual people out there, they're probably not going to know that either. So why don't we go through a little bit of terminology? What is sacred geometry?
Sacred geometry is a way of using geometric constructions and platonic solids to explain the oneness of creation. So it's using geometry to explain how everything in the universe is interconnected and how there are divine, intelligent, reoccurring patterns that repeat over and over again in all aspects of creation.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is probably the most recognized what do you think is the most recognized design or sacred geometry most people would probably recognize?
The flower of life. And Drumvalo Melchizedek, who's out of Sedona, Arizona area, he created the flower of life workshop many, many years ago, and he popularized it even more. But that symbol goes back to ancient architecture. It's found on temples and drawings and sculptures. It is universal throughout many cultures.
Mm-hmm. And, for some people who might not know what that looks like, what exactly would that look like if you were to look at it on a piece of paper?
It's 13 interconnecting circles all having the same radii. So it's like a flower made out of circles. You take one circle in the center, and then you use the same radius, and you draw six circles all around it, symbolic representation of the 6 days of creation, actually. And then you take those circles, and you draw circles all the way around that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think when we were looking at some of your pendants, so let's talk about the pendants for a second. What are the pendants and what do they look like? What do you normally sell when you go around to each of the trade shows?
The pendants are made in India by a family that's been doing it for over 20 years. And they use five different gemstones, black tourmaline, lapis lazuli, red coral, malachite, or turquoise. And they grind up the gemstones and they layer them on top of a round circle of glass. And as they layer them, they add the artwork and the glitter, and then they cover it with a round circle of glass, and then they wrap it with sterling silver. And what happens as a result is you get this beautiful, aesthetically beautiful, shiny object that it's like a cosmic magnet. When I bought my very first one and I wore it in public, strangers were stopping me in the streets and saying, where can I get one? And that was the beginning of the whole adventure. That was over 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So so many questions are coming up. So we'll do this really slowly. So tell me about your first experience. How did you come across your first pennant?
I had been... it started, I was teaching, I was a substitute teacher, and then I became a regular teacher And I taught sixth grade inner city math science, and I realized a lot of the kids were really turned off to math. So I was looking for a way to engage the students. And when I was in school, I was very good at geometric constructions, and I have an affinity toward music and video and art. And what I did was I had been exposed to the Drumvalo Melchizedek Flower of Life videos. And so I was familiar with the sacred geometry basic material. And what I did was I created original curriculum combining math, art, music, and video. It was interdisciplinary, bringing in all those aspects. And I called it Geometric Drawing, the Math-Art Connection. And I taught it to my sixth grade math students. I also taught some social studies, and I integrated like the kids forming groups and making pyramids. And we put all the projects together and created a pyramid city, which we displayed in the library at my middle school. So I taught it as a math class, and I also taught it as an elective for about 2 years to all the middle school students until they said, you can no longer teach this because you have no art credentialing. So, but I also developed it as a workshop for math teachers, which I did that for about 10 years, and I taught hundreds of teachers, which was wonderful because a lot of math teachers are very much in the left side of their brain, and this was a way to bring them back to their creativity because I end the workshop, whether it's for a few hours or 16 hours, with them drawing their own sacred design or mandala. And it allows them to take everything they've learned, all the skills they've picked up using the compass, ruler, and protractor, drawing circles, squares, and triangles. And then they can. Then we use math, music and video to open up the right side of their brain. And then we say, go inside and draw your own original sacred design or mandala. And they don't want to leave. They love it.
Now, you know, for people who haven't studied sacred geometry, when we specifically talk about the flower of life, can you give everybody a quick history lesson on the significance of this and, like, how far back and how this is, like, you know, if I remember correctly from my studies of sacred geometry, the flower of life shows up going back thousands of years and pretty much all parts of the earth.
It's been found on cave dwellings, on pyramids, in ancient Ayurvedic statues and temples. The flower of life, because you're interconnecting 13 circles, represents the oneness of creation. It's the essence of sacred geometry. It's how everything is it's all one. It's all one by intelligent design. And by studying this path of knowledge, one can, it's a great path back to the Godhead because it combines the left side of your brain, which is the mathematical, analytical side, with the right side of the brain, which is creative. And it lights up the whole brain, and it's very exciting. And the deeper you go into it, the deeper you want to study it. It takes you beyond into the limitless unknown. It's a way of piercing through the veil into the essence of creation.
Now, you know, besides wearing this around your neck, actually, I think we got off task there a little bit. How did you get your first pennant?
I was after teaching for about 12 years or so. I came to the point. I have a giant Sri Yantra, which is a very popular geometric symbol in my office, a stained glass window. And I was just looking at it and looking at it. I said, I want to have something like that because the Sri Yantra represents the creation of the universe, the Om vibration. It's a very powerful symbol. Some people think it's the most powerful geometric symbol. And so I searched the world. I got online. And when I finally found something that resonated for me, I ordered it. And that's how it all started. And then I started.
I was going to say, is that how you found the family that's been making these for 20 years?
Actually, no. They found me because I started buying them wholesale. And then I got contacted by that family, and they said, would you like to be an importer? And I went for it. And it's
wow.
just grown. It just magically has grown over the last 4 or 5 years, and it keeps getting better and better and better. And I keep presenting new patterns. I sort of have an obsession because when I see a new pattern that I like, I can't resist sending it to India. I send them a picture through the internet, and they create a they create a pendant, and then I test market it, and most all of them seem to sell because there's people who love all the different symbols.
So
I have the latest.
A lot of people are probably just biting at the bit to want to know what some of this looks like. Where can they go? Like, what is your website that they can go to see some of this so they can purchase these for themselves?
My main website is sacredpendants.org, www.sacredpendants.org. And it has everything. If you go to there's one page that explains sacred geometry. There's another thing you can click on that explains the meaning of all the symbols. There's another where it shows all the symbols and you can purchase them. Also has my life story in there, how I got into it.
So, I've seen your setup at the show and stuff like that. So, but people can't imagine what it's like when you're set up at one of the trade shows. Can you tell me roughly how many different sizes and how many different types of pendants you normally have available? Because I know
that's
some that are on a table and some of them are kept in the bins behind.
Yeah. It gets a little bit crazy because I have, right now as we speak, over 30 different patterns. I have 5 different individual gemstones. That's 150. And I have 3 different sizes. So that's 450 potential different pendants. And I keep adding more patterns. So I don't have everything all the time, but the ones that are most popular I tend to keep in stock all the time, and I pretty much can get whatever is ordered if I run out of something.
Now, I think when I was looking at some of these, I noticed that you even do a little bit of a mix where you'll have like a flower of life, and then you might have a Merkaba,
yeah.
The flower. Yeah, I think I've seen the flower, mm-hmm. and then there's I'm not totally familiar with the Jewish tradition, but what is the design, the symbol of the flower of life that represents not the Torah, but
the Merkaba?
Is it the Kabbalah? Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have a combination of the flower of life, which represents the oneness, with the Merkaba symbol inside of it. And there's a Merkaba meditation where one is able to activate their light body as a vehicle to travel through the dimensions. And so that's what the Merkaba symbolizes. And then I also have a flower of life pendant with the Kabbalistic tree of life. It has like the 10 dots representing the tree of life, the Sefirot. And I also have an individual pendant that has the tree of life only on it. And there's also, I mean, it goes on and on. There's also a pendant it's the Falasha Star of David, which is a star, Jewish star within a Jewish star. And according to the Ethiopian Jews, and from they go back to ancient times to King David, they claim that this is the original Star of David. So it gets pretty fascinating, all the stories behind all the symbols and the meanings and values, and there's a lot of teachings to be learned.
Yeah. So now you said that within any pendant, I think this is one of the things I noticed when I went to order my pendant off of your website. And of course, I had purchased a number of them when I saw you at the trade show, but I just ordered another one for a friend. Because you had asked me if I wanted a particular type of stone or something when I was choosing the flower of life. Can you explain the different types of stones and what the significance is and why
one person would want to order one over another?
Sure, and it's a pretty individual thing. But the black tourmaline it connects with the first chakra or the root chakra, and it's said to be a form of protection and grounding. And the lapis lazuli is connected, it's a dark blue, it represents the sixth and seventh chakra, and it's to help open up your higher centers. And some people use the lapis lazuli like under their pillow for dream work because it helps just to open up that whole area. And the turquoise represents the fifth chakra, which is the throat center. And my understanding, it's supposed to help people have better communication. And then there's the red coral, which has to do with your circulation and your libido and things that are connected with that redness. And then there's the malachite, which is green, and it has to do with the heart center and health and healing. So they each have their own properties. And on my website, I have a page that explains in more detail the properties of each of the five gemstones.
And is that off of your sacredtenants.org website?
Yes.
Okay, great. So have you, you know, for the time period that you've been selling these and everything like that, do you have people that write to you and share any of their stories about, you know, something that's happened in their life since they've had the pendants? And can you share some of those with us?
I get some feedback. People, first of all, the main feedback I get is that people, when they wear them, they notice a lot of people are attracted by them. And so it's an icebreaker. They're able to connect with more people more easily, especially people who are drawn to spiritual things. You know, it's interesting. I have various wholesale accounts all over the country, but I've never once been able to sell to a traditional jewelry store. Because it's a different, it's almost like a different parallel universe. They're not into this vibration. They're into the fine jewelry, you know, the diamonds and the real fancy stuff. My pendants are beautifully crafted, but they're not, it's a whole different kind of thing. I'm trying to think of stories. I've had just various people tell me that their luck has changed from, I mean, I hate to make a lot of claims because it's a very subjective thing, but people have been very excited wearing these. I can't say that I've had like heavy duty testimonials. I don't want to make up stuff. I just get positive feedback all the time. As I go throughout town in L.A., people, you know, appreciate my pendants and they thank me for them. I can't think of some specific stories right now.
So, wow, thank you for sharing that.
But I need to say one more thing in that regard. My wife, who's been working with gemstones and crystals for over 30 years, in fact, we met at a crystal healing workshop about 26 years ago. When we get the pendants in, we lay them out on this big table, and we put a pyramid over them. We put a crystal skull that has been downloaded from a larger crystal skull called Einstein. And all the information that has been gathered into that is programmed into the pendants. My wife has a lot of wonderful, positive affirmations and she programs the crystals for healing, for health, for bringing good things into your life. And when people walk by our booth, they people who are at all sensitive to energy, they really, really feel it. And then they say, you know, well, what do I get? And my wife, Pauline, says, you don't pick the crystal, the gemstone, they pick you. And it seems like they each have their own individual vibration. It's very, very interesting. And she does a lot of work in programming these to make them even more special.
So, you know, since we are talking about programming and stuff like that, I know you order a number of these pennants, and they're made by that family. And so you get them in. Now, what do you do with the pennants before you ship them out to somebody or before you take them to a trade show?
I thought I just explained that we charge them.
Okay.
We overnight we put the pyramid and the crystal skull we also have some patterns. This guy named Corey in Las Vegas who has these sacred geometry paper that puts in a love vibration. So we do as much as we possibly can to raise the vibrational frequency of the pendants.
Mm-hmm. So now I know you were talking about, you know, the stuff that you sell, and then of course you were talking about some of the stuff that your wife does. And I think I also noticed some stuff that wasn't like the traditional pendants that I'm used to seeing that you sell, and I think it had to do with some of the wood-based ones. Can you explain those a little bit?
Sure. Most of those are crop circle pendants, and they're made on wood. I think it's mahogany, and they're made with a laser, and they represent a lot of the different crop circles, especially the ones that have shown up in the countryside in England. And on the back of the wooden crop circle pendants is where it showed up, the date it showed up, and the name of the crop circle. And so I've added that to my pendants because some people prefer the wooden crop circles. I also have some sacred geometry wooden pieces in there too. They like the people who are very connected to the trees and to nature and environmentalist type people. They seem to gravitate, people who are into more of a 60s vibe, they seem to gravitate toward the wooden pendants. And it's very complementary to what I'm already selling.
Excellent. Yeah. So before we go to break, so I guess the question I have is bringing all that into the schoolroom, did it get the kids excited about the math?
The kids were very excited. And what I found was the kids that were more kinesthetic, the hyperactive ones, even some of the more gangbanger types, seemed to be really drawn to this. And it brought out that quality in them. And some of those kids, they would finish early because they seemed to have a natural propensity toward it. And then they would be able to go around and help the other kids. Also in my sacred geometry, or geometric drawing, math art connection, I called it, elective class, we chose some of the sacred geometry pictures that the kids made, their sacred designs. And during the winter concert where the orchestra played their music, we showed these on the giant screen in the school auditorium for the entire school to see what our students had created. And it was very exciting for them because they got to be acknowledged by the entire school. Oh, I did that one. So I felt very special to be part of that way of bringing kids out, because everybody wants to feel like they're doing something that's special and making a unique contribution to their community.
Excellent. So for everybody who's tuning in now, you're actually listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. This is Mark Rawson. We have Samuel on with us this evening, who's talking about sacred geometry and his spiritual journey, and we're going to talk about glass in a minute and some other interesting background on Samuel and some of the work that he's done over the years. Sam, why don't you go ahead and give everybody your different websites and talk about what the difference is between some of these and how people can find out more about your great products that you sell at trade shows around the country.
Thank you. For the pendants, my main website is sacredpendants.org. And for the Violet Flame Miron glass that I sell, it's Violet flame glass, all one word, .com. And I also have a website called, it's my original website called sacredfriends.com, and it's where people can find out about the different things that I do, and they can also sign up to be on my email blast list. I send out emails every day to over, it's now about 1,100 people who are into consciousness and health that I've personally met over the last, 13 years in the Los Angeles area. And people seem to really enjoy that because it's, you know, articles and a lot of events that are in the consciousness arena, mind, body, spirit, culture, creative type things.
That's excellent. Before we go into talking about some of the other products and everything that you carry that you make available to people, let's find out a little bit more about yourself. So what did you learn from being a public school teacher for 22 years?
Oh, my God. First of all, it's interesting because I'm a product of the LA Unified School System, and I found that it didn't do much for my creativity. My creativity seemed stifled. So it was a joy to come into the system and actually create some original curriculum that could bring creativity back into the school curriculum and back into the teachers. What I learned was the system needs some major revamping. I mean, it's easy to criticize, right? But I was in it. I was in the front lines, and it was extremely challenging. And I think that what we need to do is bring in some education at the very early age. We have to focus more on ethics and morals. We don't have to teach religion, but the students need to learn basic values, because a lot of the values that students have are skewed based on a culture, based on consumerism and waste and misplaced priorities. So I think, first of all, we need to teach the kids proper values so that they can focus on things that are life positive for them and for their society. We also need to teach them empathy. A lot of people in our culture don't really care about the other. They might, you know, have a little connection with their neighbors, their friends and family, but their circle needs to be expanded. They need to reach out and accept the stranger as part of their human family. And that needs to be focused on in the school system also. It needs to be, we're very vulnerable in our young years, and that's when we can be programmed, because we're all programmed to a certain extent, especially if you watch the news media and the television. It's a very powerful programming, more powerful than most of us realize. But at least let's program people in a good way that's life positive, to make them human beings that want to contribute to society, want to make a difference, want to help uplift all of society. And all the things I sell and my email blasts and everything is about helping people move to their next level of conscious evolution, and whatever that is for them. And I believe in personal freedom. We all have our own individual paths. We all have our own direct connection to Source. We all, it's our covenant to create our own religion, our own spirituality, our own way of reaching the Source. So I believe in supporting people in their path to their Godhead. And if somehow we could bring that more into the school system, I think it could be a much more meaningful, worthwhile experience. I think the Waldorf schools tend to do more of that. There's some people out there that are really trying to improve the educational system, but it's a very, very slow, arduous process. And being a teacher, when you care, it can bring you down. It's very hard to maintain your enthusiasm, to keep, you know, moving forward. You know, most the average burnout rate for teachers is 5 years, and somehow I made it past that.
So, you know, maybe there's a tidbit of information. What is the key to making it past the five-year burnout?
I think you have to find your niche. I think you have to find a way of making your being there more meaningful. You have to find a way to connect to the kids. You have to feel like you're making a difference. Otherwise, you end up just working to get a paycheck. And you basically are burnt out, and the kids know it. The kids are very, very astute. They can read you like a book. And they know that you're just treading water. And so everybody ends up just passing the buck. Just go along to get along, the teachers, the students. And what I found in the inner city was, this is really sad, the kids that did well and wanted to learn were put down by the D and F students. And they were traumatized, you know. So the D and F students felt like by doing well in school, you were becoming part of the system. You were selling out to the culture. And it was ass backwards. And it was hard to watch that. And I couldn't change it.
Well, I think I definitely agree with you that there is that place in the school system where, you know, the morals and that type of stuff really needs to be taught. And, you know, normally we always want to separate, you know, school and religion and stuff like that. But, you know, the truth is for years and years, a lot of those traditions would have been taught, you know, in the family structure or in some type of church structure, name whatever religion you belong to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you find is with, you know, families being so different these days as far as structure, you know, single parent, you know, parents working all the time, you know, and, you know, a lot of people not attending the traditional services anymore in whatever their faith is, you know, a lot of that is gone. And what you're left with is almost like that, you know, having to be handed off to the one place, you know, really the two places that we mentioned as far as where kids have interactions, and that is in the school system or through the media, you know, watching TV. And, you know, the question would be, and we could go on and have a whole radio show just talking about the nature of the media and you know, what exactly is being taught to children or to teenagers through the media and stuff like that. But I definitely agree with you there that there's room for that. I wonder if you could speak for a moment about some of your, I know you talked about this a little bit earlier, if you could just kind of talk about, you know, what type of struggles you had as far as getting this new idea, this new curriculum out to the, you know, into the school system. Because I know you had to kind of really put that together and sell it to a number of people. And I can't imagine, like you said, that the key for teachers to make it past the five-year mark is to find a niche. And, you know, I don't know that much about teaching because I don't teach. I know my sister's a teacher and I have a lot of friends that are teachers, but I can't imagine that's a system that lends itself to allow a niche.
Yeah, that's a very – I'm glad you asked that question because – like I said, I created my curriculum. It was a spiritual curriculum, and I changed the name to Geometric Drawing, the Math-Art Connection. And with the students, I didn't do a lot of spiritual teaching because that was a no-no. But with the math teachers, I brought in a lot of spiritual studies, like the Egyptian Mystery School, Right Eye of Horus Mystery School, and I just went into a lot of concepts which alluded towards spirituality. Like, for instance, the geometric creation of the universe, I would call it creation mythology. And I would say, if this resonates for you, fine. If not, just think of it as another theory that doesn't work for you. So it's important how you word things. And teaching thousands of, well, maybe a couple thousand over the years, teachers, I only had one teacher walk out on me, and I went after him during a workshop, and I went after him. I said, "What's wrong? Why are you leaving?" He said, "I'm a born-again Christian, and I refuse to be part of this. You are using this geometric drawing seminar to teach spirituality." And he was right, and that was the only person that ever complained. But it's interesting. After 10 years of teaching this material, I thought I would test the system because I had a pretty nice situation. They would fill up the school system would fill up the room for me. I didn't have to pay for the room, and they would pay me like $40 an hour to teach this workshop. And so I didn't have much motivation to go out into public and create my own seminars. So I threw a monkey, what's the monkey wrench, into the system. After 10 years, I called my seminar when I applied to teach for the sixth or seventh time at the California Math Conference, where I taught up to 100 teachers at a time. Instead of calling a geometric drawing the math art connection, I called it sacred geometry the math art connection. What do you think happened?
What?
They said, we don't have room for this seminar.
Oh, boy.
And I sort of intuitively knew that might happen. I was just testing. And so I could no longer teach it under that new name. So that motivated me to take my workshop and go public with it. And then once I went public, I was using overhead transparencies. And that was sort of so 20th century. So I gradually forced myself. I'm not much of a techie, but I forced myself to develop a PowerPoint presentation. And so now I do like an hour and a half to 2 hour PowerPoint presentation on sacred geometry, and it's very beautiful. I've gathered pictures from many, many different sources, and it takes people through a visual adventure that the feedback I get is tremendous. People just love it. They get the essence of sacred geometry from the visual and from my explanation of the subject.
Yeah.
So it's been quite an interesting road.
It was interesting because I had actually gone up to New Jersey and took a class from my friend Brigida on sacred geometry, and that was my introduction to it. And then had a chance to work with Maureen St. Germain out of New York for a little bit, and she introduced me to remind me of the name again, the guy who came up with the Merkable meditation. Is it
Drumbolo Melchizedek?
Thank you. And he has two books out called Sacred Geometry, Volume 1 and 2. And I just
Flower of Life,
studying them. Yeah, just finished studying those over the last 3 or 4 months. And what amazed me was a couple different things. First of all was that there's such a connection. There is that oneness that comes no matter what religion anybody belongs to, that, you know, it all comes back to the one.
Mm-hmm.
And what amazed me, and you know, being part of some of those students out there, was of course my eyes glazing over a little bit as all the math came into play. But at the same time, just the this like validation of everything, based on the fact that there's so much math, that that pi is embedded in everything, and that, you know, as far as that number sequence and how the design of life and everything that lives has a number sequence and all the different things that come together in the sacred geometry. So it was just really amazing to see that kind of pattern or that type of validation about the nature of everything that's created.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was my aha moment in you know, my introduction to all that. And I was actually surprised, I guess, when I got into sacred geometry to just see how much math it was. And for anybody out there who wants to start to look into this, do not worry. You do not have to have the math degree to understand this. But I was surprised, actually, to see how much math there actually is that supports all the different things that are mentioned in those volumes. And I'm sure there's plenty of other.
Yeah, it almost makes you want to believe in God. Like there's a divine intelligence that's actually orchestrating the way the universe unfolds.
So before we talk a little bit more about yourself and your journey, tell us about this product you have. I think it's called the Violent Flame Glass.
Yeah, that was my first product. After teaching for about 22 years, I said, well, there's people making money on the internet. You know, I felt like I needed a change. I wanted to try something new, reinvent myself. And so I was like open to possible things that could help me take early retirement, to help supplement my income, which would drop when I left my job. And so I went to this party once, and this guy asked me to come outside, and he took this bottle out of his car. It was a violet bottle. It actually looked almost black. but it was violet. And as soon as I saw it, I had an instant knowingness. I had an instant feeling. It's like love at first sight. When it happens, you know it. And I had been doing, now it's about 35 years, I've been doing Reiki about 35 years, and so I'm sort of sensitive to energy, and energetically I felt like I had to have that bottle. I had to have it. And when I looked into, that's my drinking water bottle, and when I looked into it, I found out they were very expensive. So I did further research, and I found that I could buy them by the case. And so I started with that 1 liter bottle, and I just started selling them to my friends, and it took off. And so I just started adding more and more sizes. Now I have over 20 sizes of these violet glass bottles and jars. And what they do is this type of glass took them 7 years to develop it exactly in the right shade of purple. It blocks most of the visible light spectrum. It only allows violet, ultraviolet, and infrared into the bottle. So light is used by nature to decompose things once they're harvested. And so by blocking out most of the light spectrum, what it does is it slows down oxidation. It keeps things fresher longer, whatever you put inside of it. And then the ultraviolet and infrared seems to work alchemically to raise the vibrational frequency of whatever is inside of it. And I have a dowser in Mount Shasta who buys them every year. He buys a whole bunch of them, and he puts all his things in them. And excuse me, what he found out was that after keeping superfoods, things that have energetic properties that you want to preserve in these bottles and jars, that it rose the energetic vibrational frequency 30 to 50%. The life force, the vitality was raised by keeping them in these bottles. And so I get orders. I have this website, violetflameglass.com, and I get orders from all over the world. And I just ship them out. I get them and I ship them out. And it's a labor of love. I'm making money too. Imagine that. But I enjoy handling these bottles because of the energy I feel from them. And so even though I've been doing this for 5 years, I haven't gotten tired of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I remember correctly, those bottles have sacred geometry symbols on them.
That's something, you know, I like to change things around a bit. So about 3 months ago, I started putting sacred geometry symbols with affirmations underneath them to make them even more potent, because everything has vibrational frequency. The whole universe is composed of light and vibrational frequency and sound. They're all frequencies. And so I have one that has a flower of life symbol, and underneath it has love and gratitude. According to Dr. Emoto, who's a famous scientist from Japan, that's the most effective thing you can put on a bottle. And then I have another one that has a Sri Yantra symbol, and I have underneath it strength and unity. And I have a flower of life symbol on another bottle that it says a vibrant health. And I have one with a heart with two wings that's sort of a Sufi kind of symbol. And underneath it I have Rumi's dream. And I have a few more of these. And I just had fun. You know, I found the guy who etches bottles, and he etches them, and I have those on my website too. So I have the bottles and two sizes of jars that have the affirmations and the sacred geometry. So it just keeps me going, keeps me interested, keeps reinventing myself. I tell people I'm semi-retired and totally rewired. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got to keep life interesting.
So how did you become such an avid networker?
Well, that's a good question. My parents were Holocaust survivors, and I was in my 20s processing a lot of the stuff that was transferred to me through them. And I went through a lot of years of pain and loneliness and not having a lot of friends, and I got to experience the depths of despair for being alone and feeling like a lost soul. In fact, I had about 10 years of that, and it really deepened me. I don't wish that on anybody, but it's what I went through. And when I started to come out of it, I tried to help some of my friends who were still in despair, and I found that it would pull me back in. And so I realized I couldn't do it alone. So after attending the 5th National Men's Conference at UCLA, oh, about 30 years ago, maybe more like 25 years ago, and we had a men's group that met once a week for 10 weeks. And then a friend of mine said, why are you just meeting with the men? Why don't you work it out with the women? So I had a friend of mine who was a feminist, and she got her feminist friends, and I got my men's group. And we met once a month at different people's homes and had discussions about relationships and men, you know, dealing with issues that men and women were going through. And a lot of the women were very angry, and they poured their anger out on us, and we just sort of were a safe space for them to do that, and we took it, and there was a lot of processing, and we met once a month for about a year and a half, and that fizzled out. And then I just liked the idea of bringing people together to support each other so that we could uplift each other, because we all go through, you know, our highs and lows and our good times and our hard times, and so we could support each other through all the changes as a community. And so I started to have gatherings, book club gatherings, where you're supposed to read a book and talk about it. Most people didn't read the books, so that was a little frustrating. And then in 1986, I went to the 87, the Harmonic Convergence. All over the world, spiritual groups were gathering to uplift the consciousness of the planet. And I went to Oaxaca, Mexico, to El Tule Tree, where Quetzalcoatl was supposed to come up through the roots of the tree and spread his sparks to 144,000 spiritual people throughout the world. And by the way, the people who were taking mushrooms actually saw that. That's a joke. But it's true. I mean, that's what they said. Anyways, on the way to Oaxaca, I stopped in Mexico City, and I went to Teotihuacan, which is a pyramid, very famous pyramid outside of Mexico City, just north of the city. And there's the Pyramid of the Moon and the Pyramid of the Sun, and it's a very, very powerful ancient Aztec spiritual place. In fact, I was so moved. People were just acting like tourists, and I was having this catharsis of spirituality. There was just energy pouring through me, and I was looking around, and I said, why aren't other people experiencing this? What's wrong here? Anyways, I meditated on the Pyramid of the Sun. In fact, they had to kick me out because I stayed last closing time. And what I got was I wanted to have a spiritual community meeting in my home, my apartment in Santa Monica, that met once a week, and where there's a fellowship, and that where people would be spiritually uplifted on a weekly basis. And so I came back, and I started Transformational Friends of Santa Monica. And every week we'd gather. Everyone was welcome. We'd have between 20 and 40 people in my little apartment. And we'd sit in a circle, and I would use relaxing music to put people into a meditative mood, and we'd have a half an hour of silence. Then I'd have inspirational music to bring them out of the silence. Then we'd go around the room, introduce ourselves, announce community events, share whatever we needed to share, and then we'd have a speaker or a movie or something that was positive and uplifting from many different spiritual, cultural traditions. And then I'd have a whole table of really good, healthy food. And I did that for a year and a half every Wednesday night, and then I did it on a larger scale. I rented out a hall in the community and did it twice a month. And we were written up in the LA Times, and we had as many as 70 people come. And I did that for another year or so, and then I sort of got burnt out. I didn't know how to delegate. So I did most of it myself. I met my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, Pauline, at that time. And so that was like the 20th century version. That was in 89, 90, 91. And then the last 13 years or so, I switched that whole – I had a mailing list back then, snail mail list of about 600 people. Every 2 months I would send out a newsletter explaining who was speaking, some of my sentiments, that kind of thing. So now I have a modern-day version, 21st century version, where I have a virtual community on the internet, sacredfriends.org, and I send out email blasts every day to over 1,100 people I've personally met, a dedicated list of people who are into consciousness. I met these people at all the shows and friends of friends, and it's become a very viable way of connecting to people.
Mm-hmm. So as we kind of wrap up the end of the show, let's go in for some little tidbits here, some great knowledge and wisdom, and that is, what's the best advice you have for people for living a happy, fulfilling life?
By the way, I have one quick thing. It was out of that pain and suffering that was the deep inspiration for me to create community where people could go through their life changes in a supportive environment so they wouldn't have to suffer as much as I did, so they could have cathartic, quick transformation into the beyond the veil into a more harmonious life. So some tidbits, eh? I would say if you're lucky enough and if you keep looking, you will eventually find your particular niche in the scheme of things. Sometimes you have to try many things for many years and it gets frustrating, but the more things you try, the more things you've eliminated, and I'd say, okay, that doesn't work, that's not me, and eventually you get to know yourself. Some people know, my wife knew when she was 5 years old that she wanted to be a nurse in this lifetime. Not all of us are that lucky. We have to go through the school of hard knocks to really learn who we are. But once you find your niche, you have to be willing. Now, I had a high-paying teacher job. I was the top of the scale. You have to be willing to leave the comfort zone and go out and reinvent yourself and surrender to the source, to the all-knowing, whatever the God is for you, that divine intelligence that behind creation that I think is all pulling for us to go to a more positive place, to our greatest potential. You have to surrender and be willing to do whatever it takes, and the universe will throw things at you to make sure you really are committed. They won't just let you have it just like a red carpet. They will test you to make sure that you really want it. But if you pursue, if you don't give up, like even with these products I sell, sometimes there's been periods where it's really slow. But if you have a passion for what you're doing, you keep going through the periods of frustration and where things are not happening. And eventually you break through. It's made, I think the system, the game of life is made so that if we're committed and we're willing to do whatever it takes, that we will break through. Ultimately, that's the way it's designed. I think there is a divine, positive, loving, harmonious intelligence that wants us to get whatever we need to get, but we have to work for it. We can't just wish it. It doesn't work that way. We have to do whatever it takes. Yeah.
So with that, as we wrap up the show, go ahead and give out your website again.
Sure. Thank you. Sacred Pendants, P-E-N-D-A-N-T-S, sacredpendants.org. violetflameglass.com and sacredfriends.org if you're interested in being on my email blast list, which is mainly focused on the Los Angeles area. A lot of events. I like to help people connect to things that are interesting to them that help them have a positive experience.
Well, What an incredible hour, Samuel. Thanks a lot for being our guest on Spiritual Connections Radio, and it's great to have you on, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Night.